You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The London Times noted not long ago that J.B. Priestley keeps being rediscovered because he's never really gone away. We've seen a couple of restagings of his plays in recent years, and now there's The Glass Cage, which was last performed in 1957, but is receiving its American premiere at the Mint Theater on West 43rd Street, just off of 8th Avenue. Lou Jacob directed this taut tale about what happens when the black sheep in a family suddenly show up. Jerry Bamman plays the family patriarch, David McBain, and I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to speak to both of them. Hello.
Very nice to be here, Leonard.
Hard to believe that this has never been produced in the United States. Where was it produced then?
Well, it was originally commissioned by the Crest Theater in Toronto and written for these three particular actors who were in that company. And Then they did it in 57 in Toronto. They brought that production to London at the time. Since then, it was done in England, I believe, a year and a half, 2 years ago. And that's it.
Well, Priestley is British, but yeah. The play is set in Canada because it was commissioned for Canadians?
Pretty much that's the only reason that it was commissioned for these Canadian actors. And I think it provided, along with the setting of 1906, provided a great kind of allegorical setting for Priestley's concerns.
But commissioned, is also a little bit of an odd word for this, because he was so struck by these two brothers and a sister, yeah, the Davis family, when he was introduced to them when he was on a book tour, that he wanted to write the play. Mm-hmm. And it's not as if they sought him out. And once he made his intentions known, they did find a little bit of money to sort of commission him, but I think he would have written the play for them no matter what.
Mm. This could have been said in England, but really it does make more sense in Canada because of the nature of, well at least the story that he's concocted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What other kind of theater was being written at this point? I mean, the Glass Cage was produced around the same time that John Osborne and the Angry Young Men were changing British theater. Mm-hmm. Do you see him as fitting in?
He is fitting out. I mean, he was the receding wave.
But is it not old? This is not an old-fashioned play.
I think John Osborne would definitely disagree with you. Mm-hmm. I think that there was a huge battle between them, the angry young playwrights and the trend that Priestley represented. And Priestley was on the way out. And it's not... I think now we look back and say, wow, he knew a little bit about writing, but I think that new wave of playwrights wanted to just throw him in the trash bin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although there is something cutting edge about this, perhaps he was being spurred on by what was happening around him.
Absolutely, you know, he and today, ironically, he's being, as you say, rediscovered and revived even more than Osborne in some respects. And so his history is being very kind to Mr. Priestley.
Were either of you familiar with Priestley's work before you got involved with this production?
Only one play, The Inspector Calls, which had that extraordinary production on Broadway, seven, 8 years ago, something like that.
And ran in London for 1,000 years.
Yeah, and
but that was a creakier play than this one.
Also, the production was so brilliant that you almost don't remember the play. You remember that set was just one of the most fabulous things you've ever seen in a theater.
One of the most memorable productions of the last, 20 years. But, Dangerous Corner gets revived quite a bit. Time in the Conway is a great play. And certainly he was a playwright when Jonathan Bank, the artistic director of the Mint, and I were talking about plays to do. We really lit on Priestley as a writer. That would be great.
And was this available? Was a script out there that you could find?
At the time when we started looking at it, no, it was rather obscure. And I think Jonathan, who's a genius at finding these plays, found it in an old out-of-print Canadian, copy and sent it to me. It has since been republished in part of a collection. So it's getting out there in print more. But rather obscure.
It involves a very solid, well-to-do Canadian family where four brothers were business partners, and then everything is thrown off balance when the three adult children of one of the deceased brothers abruptly arrive in this house in Toronto from various places around Canada that they've been living.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
You want to go any further? Since, Jerry, you play the patriarch of the family, the center to some degree of the stolid part of the family.
Yeah. Well, what attracted me to the script was, and to this character, was his reversal from what you, an audience, thinks, or a reader, which is how I first encountered it, expects the character to turn out. And, of course, reversal of character is one of the ancient virtues of dramaturgy in the theater. And it's from that standpoint, is very appealing. But what I love about audiences seeing the play is that you can just feel them thinking right from the first, oh, I see what kind of play it is. And then at the end of the first scene, they have to take that back. They don't know what's going on. Then at the end of the second scene, they think they've got to figure it out again. And then at the end of the third scene, they have to reverse course once more, and they still get reversed in the last scene.
Because this would have been very easy to have degenerated into stereotypes. Your character, in particular, is a Bible-thumping head of a family. He regularly conducts prayer meetings, and we kind of pigeonhole him right away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that means for you as an actor, because you don't want to undermine our expectations. At the same time, you don't want to get yourself too firmly entrenched in it, because there are going to be certain reversals.
Well, but
not total reversals.
I think that, the sort of job of my job as an actor is to make those changes logical, and that an audience can buy them. That they don't come like Deus Ex Machina revelations, and I think that's quite possible. It's just that it comes in a surprising way, in a character that you think you had figured out. My daughter was. When she saw it, said it was just so much fun to watch you play a character you despise in those first couple of scenes.
Well, you really have to think about nuance here, because in the end, he does not have a total reversal. He doesn't suddenly become an atheist, but he still turns out to have more depth than we might have expected. But there is a sense at times that J.B. Priestley is taking sides in this thing. There's a lot of confrontations, and you feel at times that he really is more with this other group than he mm-hmm. is with the traditional family.
Mm-hmm. But what I think what's great about the play, and also what I responded to as well as Jerry, is even with the niece and nephews that come into this house, at first you would assume to be on their side. They're somewhat disenfranchised, and they're also turn out to be very very witty and attractive and all that. So they get their comeuppance in a number of ways, in emotional ways,
because they can be rather unpleasant at times.
Absolutely, they're not they are not angels by any stretch, and they're exposed emotionally as well, and have to come to grips with their own sense of responsibility for themselves.
What should we get out of the title of the play?
Well, there's a speech toward the end of the play, and I won't say too much more about that, but it has to do with people existing with living inside of a kind of cage of resentment and anger, and carrying what we carry around with us for years and years, and within our families and within ourselves. And the characters that are stuck sort of in this glass cage have to deal with that reality and how they're going to go forward in the future and sort of break out of that cage.
Because there's a lot of talk about apologies and forgiveness and whether they are enough to resolve past sins.
But also about how you're imprisoned by your own resentment and your own negative emotions. I mean, I think it's sort of wonderful that you had Mike Lee on earlier with this film, which is sort of the other side of the coin of the same issue.
Did the cast get together and discuss interpretations of what the play might mean?
Well, that happens over the course of the whole rehearsal process. This is a play that is very dense with a lot of different layers going on, emotionally, thematically, theatrically. And so we get in a room together, we lock ourselves in a room, and we wrestle with it for a whole, you know, for 6 weeks. And yes, we talk about that at the beginning of rehearsal, but really all the way through.
Do you think that it was performed the same way when it was originally done, or did these rediscoveries put a whole other coloration on an older play?
I think that plays exist simultaneously in different time periods. They exist in the period, the time that they're written, 1957 in this case. They also exist in the time period that's placed, 1906, but it also has to exist today. And so I think that it probably, this production probably bears some resemblance, but in terms of the interpretation, but not much.
But
really.
That would be true of Medea or
Absolutely.
Shakespeare.
Anything.
Or anything.
I don't think any play would be the same 50 years later than what it was then.
An American company versus a Canadian company, et cetera.
Are his lines fun to play, Jerry?
Very. And, you know, you read the play and you think, oh, it's a little bit preachy. But then you start working on it, you find that almost all of those lines come on the crest of some emotional argument that's an intense mano a mano struggle with another character, and they don't come out intellectual, or they come out as the height of an emotional wave, and that's a very interesting virtue for a playwright.
Well, they're never preachy in the real sense. Because J.B. Priestley is not preaching.
I was nervous about it when I read it, but in working on it and watching actors really get their mouths around those words and the emotions around the words, it doesn't come out that way, yeah. No.
My guests are Jerry Bammon, who is one of the stars of a new production, the first production in this country of J.B. Priestley's The Glass Cage at the Mint Theater through November 8th. And Lou Jacob, the director of the play. Jerry, how did you wind up with the Mint Theater? You've won your share of Obies and Drama League awards. Is this your first thing with the
Mint? It is the first thing, but that often happens. If I find a script that appeals to me, and in this case the character really appealed to me, I'm willing to go anywhere.
Do you like the fact that it's a limited run? Because your production of Alice in Wonderland was performed over 500 times in New York alone than around the world.
No, because I like it so much, and I have to say, just to get, because I want this out, I think the rest of the cast is so brilliant.
Absolutely.
That it's such a pleasure to share a stage with them and watch them and work with them that... No, I would love it if it were not limited, that it were going on. But, you know, I'm happy to have had the chance to do it this way, too.
Well, we should mention the other names, cast members, Jack Rutherall, Robin Mosley, Sandra Struthers, Clark, Chad Heppner, Fiona Toybean, Cher Carlin, Janine Seralia?
Seralis,
Saxon Palmer, and Aaron Crone. You also, Jerry. How did you come to found the Manhattan Project with Andre Gerber?
Well, Andre directed the last project of my graduating year at NYU School of the Arts, which is now Tisch School of the Arts, and we got along famously. In this, it was a one act out of a Molière play that he directed, and I think in a sort of off the cuff remark, he said, "Oh, we ought to form a company." And I and a couple of others said, okay, let's do it. And I think he wasn't exactly really meaning that as a concrete proposal, but it developed, and we stayed together and made this company. And by the luck of the gods, the first production was a huge success, so we were able to last for a few years.
I'm sure you enjoy making the movies as well, but they allow you to do this sort of thing.
That's right.
You've been in Runaway Jury, Home Alone 1 and 2, Lorenzo's Oil. When will My Father's Will be coming out?
I don't know. I mean, I keep every once in a while I look at the website to see, and it seems to be getting closer and closer, but I don't know.
Lou, you've directed a wide array of plays across the country and around the world. Does your approach change when you're in Pittsburgh, Barrington, D.C., or New York?
Not really. The approach changes depending on the play. Each play has a little bit of an instruction manual embedded in it, and your success as a director, I think, is governed by how well you read that instruction manual. So you have to rethink your process, I think, for every single play.
Have you worked with the Mint before?
No, I haven't. Jonathan and I have known each other for a long time. We sort of came of age together in the theater a while back. We met, and then we re-met, and we spent some time, a few years, batting some scripts back and forth and landed on this one, which was...
And you must be very pleased. It's been extended twice.
Yes. We're on till right now, till November 8th.
And I want to thank you both so much for being with us. I've been speaking with Lou Jacob, who is the director of The Glass Cage by J.B. Priestley at the Mint Theater through November 8th. It's on the third floor at 311 West 43rd Street, in case you've never been there. It's amazing. It doesn't look like anybody would go up there, and yet then every time you show up for a performance, it's a full house.
Yeah.
If you want more information about it, you can go to our show page at WMIC.org. And Jerry Bamman is star of stage and screen, and he plays David McCabe in the play. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.